Today we are starting a brief new summer sermon series, that's really hard to say, which is about the spiritual heroes of Hebrews chapter 11. Heroes are interesting, aren't they? You may know that I love going to the cinema. I've got one of those all-you-can-watch cinema cards. I will go watch anything at the cinema as long as it's not a horror film, because I am easily scared. And it might surprise you, my very favourite sort of film is science fiction. I'm a bit of a nerd. And I really love a Marvel film. Any Marvel fans? Oh, yes. Yes, love a Marvel film. If you don't know anything about the Marvel Universe, Paul is like looking at me going, no idea what you're talking about. Spider-Man. Who else have we got? Captain America. Iron Man. Anyone else? Anyone know? The Hulk. Doctor Strange. Black Widow. You've got everything possible in the Marvel Universe. It's all brilliant. Superheroes. But you might have got some real-life heroes, some historical or perhaps present figures that have inspired you. Maybe you're a huge fan of Churchill. A lot of people are going, no. Okay, maybe some other leaders. Perhaps you watch these ladies, the Lionesses, and their epic win yesterday. Better than the rugby, I am told, yesterday. Perhaps you're inspired by these wonderful women as they win the football, as they show the men how it's done. As they inspire a generation of girls to take up football. So, a question. Who's your hero or heroine or your role model? Don't just say Jesus, because we're in church. Who is your hero or your heroine or your role model and why? Turn to someone around you and very quickly answer that question. Okay, anybody want to tell me who their hero, heroine, role model is and why? Anybody want to tell me? Grace.
Monica from Friends.
Monica from Friends. Do you know, I wasn't expecting that. What? She's very clean freak.
Yeah, clean freak, but has that closet that's full of rubbish. She has that one place where all the mess can go, but she looks great on in the house. Everywhere's got a place, but then she has that one place where all the rubbish can go.
We can all relate. As then, we've all got that drawer in the kitchen, haven't we? That everything is in. Enid, I'll come round to this side.
Florence Nightingale.
Florence Nightingale, why?
Because she was the one that instituted better... care for soldiers in the war, and established and involved in establishing hospitals and the training for nurses.
Thank you very much, says the nurse. Lifelong nurse. Anyone else? Two very different. Oh, hang on. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Louise. Smith Wigglesworth.
Oh. Do you want to tell people who Smith Wigglesworth is?
Well, he was a wonderful healing evangelist, and he trusted in the Lord for everything. He was around from round about 1859 through into the 1940s, and he travelled the world And many times he had no money to travel the world, but he went wherever God told him to go, and God provided for him, and he trusted in the Lord, and the Lord used him to heal many people throughout the world and to bring them to him. And yeah, he's my hero.
Thank you. Anyone else? Did you have your hand up?
Dolly Parton.
From Smith Wigglesworth to Dolly Parton.
Not just for her immense talent and for flying the flag for bigger busted women everywhere, but I would hope everybody knew about her imagination library. She is giving back in a massive way. Where she comes from, she gives books to all the children in school on a regular basis. She started an imagination library in Yorkshire.
Yay!
And
we need all the help we can get in Yorkshire.
And she donated a substantial sum to COVID inoculation research. She isn't someone who acts like she looks. She is someone who acts in faith and who does a tremendous amount of good. And I would say an awful lot of people have no idea what she's giving back.
Well done. Colette, last one.
There's two. There's Corrie ten Boom. She's fabulous lady because she just so...
Hang on. There's a film at the cinema Wednesday. Corrie ten Boom, if you're interested in The Hiding Place, at the Light Cinema Wednesday. Book your ticket.
Have you got a ticket? Oh, I'm going. And the other one is Judi Dench. She's just fabulous. She's just a natural lady. She just doesn't get taken in by all the airs and graces and different things that people do when they're with the famous. And she's just so natural and so giving and so selfless.
Last one, Paul.
Yeah, can I just say, is mic working? Jane Fonda. Just because she did a lot for the civil rights movement in America, the black people and their struggle. And I just think she's wonderful what she does for the environment and, you know, a real fighter. Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm sure we could come up with loads more. When I was thinking about it, I was thinking of Nelson Mandela, but I was thinking also of Victoria Wood. Loved Victoria Wood. Interesting. Our heroes and heroines and our role models. Well, we're thinking about Hebrews 11 in this summer sermon series. We're using it as a jumping off point. I was reading Hebrews 11 a couple of weeks ago and I was really struck by it. It's all about faith. It's an account of some people in the Old Testament, some of whom we know really well and some we might not, who are commended for their faith. Some are named, some are not. Here's the named ones. We have Abel and Enoch and Noah, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses' parents, Moses, Rahab, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel. They're named because their lives have shown exemplified faith in God. They are in the hall of fame of faith. Spiritual heroes and heroines. But should we look up to them as role models? Are they in the same category as Dolly Parton, Monica from Friends, Jane Fonda, Smith Wigglesworth, and some of the other people that we've mentioned? Hebrews 11 is meant to be encouraging us to faith. As I was reading it, it dawned on me that these names, some of them are far from perfect. They're people, just people, with flaws, with character faults, not perfect, but perhaps people who have been put on a spiritual pedestal. And I was thinking, why are they there in this hall of fame? So I carried on reading through Hebrews 11, and I got to Hebrews 12, where it began to make a bit more sense. That we shouldn't look at these figures as perfect examples of faithfulness, perfect examples of a godly life. Once you get to Hebrews chapter 12, you get these words. Therefore. Now, therefore is a connecting word. It connects both chapters. And we were told at Bible college, if there's a therefore, always ask what it's there for. Ba-bum-tish. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of God, throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. The point is, one should not focus on any of the feeble heroes of chapter 11, but rather focus on Jesus. The selected stories of faith in Hebrews 11 are catalysts which point towards God. And so we're going to do that today as we look in the next few weeks at these faith-filled but flawed characters whose stories are included as people of God who were used in their brokenness and in their humanity. We're looking at Sarah this week. Yay for the Sarahs present. We have loads of Sarahs in this church. We love you, Sarahs. Then we're looking at Moses. No Moses. We need a Moses coming to church membership. Then Jacob, and then David. Remembering the goal of the Christian life isn't to reflect their lives, but to reflect Jesus. This is what Hebrews 11 says about Sarah and Abraham, her husband. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him. Heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. I think we might recognize the story from which that came from, Genesis chapter 21, which says this, "Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him." Maybe you remember the story in Genesis. God calls Abraham and his wife to leave, to go to a land that God will tell them, and God would bless them. As it says in Genesis 15, God would bless them and multiply their descendants all over the earth. All well and good. But it doesn't happen in the timing they want. We know the ending. All is well. We've just heard it. But they don't know the ending. And Sarah didn't know the ending. And years go by, decades, and there is no blessing of descendants. There is no children. And they wait, and they wait, and nothing happens. Diddly squat. But God has promised. But nothing happens. And that must, I think, have been devastating. Knowing God's promise to give Abraham a nation, and that happens through Sarah, must have been really stressful. She must have felt embarrassed because she has no children in a society where that's really important, where that's literally your role as a woman. The societal expectation that means your worth and your identity is based on that, and nothing is happening because you're really quite old. In Sarah's society, children were your reputation and your honor. Children are your security and your retirement plan. If a woman doesn't have a child, then she's got no one to care for her if her husband dies. And there is a pressure to fulfill God's promise. And so Sarah takes the story and the action out of God's hands into her hands. She knows her own body, she knows she can't have children, so she comes up with a plan B to help God out. Genesis 16 tells us what happened. Now Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abraham, "Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go in to my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abraham listened to the voice of Sarah. So Sarah's held up as a model of faith, but she doesn't always have the faith that God would fulfill his promise to provide a son for her. She becomes impatient and she takes matters into her own hand. Abraham fathered a child, Ishmael, with Sarah's maidservant, Hagar. Now that sounds shocking to us. That sounds like Abraham going off and sleeping out of wedlock with another woman. Sounds like adultery. Sounds like affairs. However odd and shocking that might sound to us, to Sarah's culture, it's the accepted solution that if you can't have children, you give your husband a slave girl to serve as a baby-making machine. But they don't have the full legal rights that a wife has. And if the baby's born, then that belongs not to the slave, but to you as the wife. Interesting. It all gets tricky when Sarah attempts to help God along. Sarah is jealous of Hagar. Hagar hates Sarah. Sarah ill-treats Hagar. Hagar runs away. God has to send an angel to get her back. And she returns and gives birth to Ishmael, to son of Abraham, who is a slip of a lad at 86 years old. Now, both Abraham and Sarah think it's okay just to help God a little bit. They can't wait anymore. He's 86, for heaven's sake. They don't live like they believe God is going to do what he promised. He's taking too long. Does that look like faith to you? Not really, does it? And you can understand on a human level why that would be. They are old. They're past the menopause. They're past childbearing age. I love to get menopause in every conversation. It is impossible by natural means. They have not got IVF for OAPs in Israel. They take control back from God. And I think we can learn something from that about the temptation for us always to be in control, to be masters of our own fate, to not allow God the time to do what God needs to do in you. We learn from Sarah's flaws about her impatience. And we can understand why that would be. But God had told her she was going to have a child. God told her. We see it, her lack of faith in waiting for what God has promised. At the end of the story, we see that she does have faith when all the knots are untied, but in the middle of the story, when it's raw and it's real and it's messy, she doesn't 100% trust God. She doesn't 100% trust his faithfulness or his promises because she can't see them for herself. And sometimes I've done the same. Perhaps you have too. Sarah reminds us that our timings and our purposes and plans are not the same as God's often. And sometimes that's a hard walked through discipleship. When you've asked God and you've not heard. When your prayers are seemingly empty and your faith is tested, it was for Sarah. An elderly Sarah even laughed at God's reiterated promise in Genesis 18, when these three strangers turn up and one of them tells Sarah that she is going to have a child. Sarah laughed to herself as she thought, "After I am worn out and my Lord is old, will I now have this pleasure?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Will I really have a child now that I'm old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the appointed time next year, and Sarah will have a son.'" Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, "I didn't laugh." But he said, "Yes, you did laugh." Some people laugh when they're exasperated or disappointed. Perhaps she doesn't dare hope. Sometimes people laugh when they're nervous, in a way when they have to deflect the fact they've got to deal with something that's deep and intense. Some people laugh out of disbelief. When I'm told, "Yes, I will clean my room," I go, "Yeah, as if." She laughs when she is confronted with this lack of faith. She laughs, not even aloud, and God hears. And we're reminded in this extraordinary story that God deals with impossible situations all the time. If God can hear this inner silent laugh, could he not also hear and heal her inner body? God hears. And despite her initial skepticism, we get to the point at the end of the story where Sarah believes God's promises and adjusts her eyes to see the blessing in trusting God. Even when that does not seem to make sense, despite the obstacles in front of her, she comes through. As does God when he gives her a child at the age of 90. Woohoo! Enid, you're nearly 90. How would you feel about that? Is that a terrifying thought? This reminds me that circumstances are never a problem for God, even if they appear to be a problem for us. If he wants to do something in a particular way, he will do it. He will make it happen, even if that does not seem reasonable. God makes a way. And we're called to trust his faithfulness and to trust in his promises. When looking at Sarah's failings, I think I see mine too. Perhaps you see yours. And I'm reassured that the laugh and the lie and some of her very bad behaviour doesn't ruin things. It doesn't stop God using her. Whilst it's a story about her, it's also a story about the God who makes and keeps promises, who is faithful and will do what he says. And Isaac is born, and his name means laughter. Love that. A name of grace and covenant. And Sarah says at the end of the story, God has brought me laughter. And everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. Yay. Isaac is born. Later on, he has twins, Esau and Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons. And from them, we have a multitude of descendants, one of whom is Jesus. One of her grandsons, kind of. You see, it's in Jesus that all the promises of God come true. Sarah teaches us that we can't do things in our own strength. We can't do the things that God can do. Sarah tries a plan B by having a child through Hagar, but that wasn't what God wanted. God planned to give her a child and change her laughter of hopelessness to laughter of hope, but she had to come to believe in God and his promises. That sounds very gospel-like to me. We try to do things in our own way, and we can't sort them out by ourselves. So God makes a way where there seems to be no way, and that way is Jesus, as we heard, who were called to be running after, modeling ourselves on him, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endures the cross, scorning its shame, sitting down at the right hand of the throne of God. What's this say to us? Or perhaps your personal plans have unraveled and you need to find and trust God's for yours, for your life. Perhaps you have that same sense as Sarah, that you're laughing with exasperation at the mess that you sometimes get yourselves in. The God of Sarah is our God who is here today. And the God who made promises to her makes promises to us in Jesus. And that promise is presence. God says, you are loved. I am with you. I am for you. Come to me. But come on my terms and not yours. Admit your mess and your failure and your sin and your control freakery and let me lead you. You can't do it in your own strength. That's what grace is for. A life with Christ isn't earned. Salvation is a gift. Let's pray. Dear Lord.